92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a happy holiday season. This is our last show before Christmas Day. So we have kind of an unorthodox approach to Christmas that we're going to be taking in this week's show that we'll tell you about a little bit later in the show. But joining me to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here. The Christmas parade last week was a blast. Thank you very much for having my wife and I, Julio. That was very fun. It got us in the festive spirit. So first positive acclaim to you for doing that, man.
Yeah, Jeremy joined us on the Pensacon float at the parade in downtown Pensacola last week. We had a lot of fun. Throwing some beads and some t-shirts and some other stuff at all you people that were screaming for us. We appreciate that. And, you know, Jeremy, not just part of the show, but is part of Pensacon too. He hosts our short film festival every year. So just felt right to bring you along.
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool. Not only was it my first time attending the parade, but it was also obviously my first time being in the floats and experiencing it from that perspective. And it just, it's good to get in the kind of Christmas spirit in that way. And, you know, as a Floridian, you kind of got to take it when you get the little victories, because it's, you know, been incredibly hot for the majority of the month. It's starting to cool down a little bit now, which is nice, but it's not as if we see snow or anything like that. And to kind of take it even further, we were in New York last year for Christmas, which was, it's like just the perfect Christmas experience. This year, my wife and I are going to Miami, and I'm excited about that, but I can't imagine the Christmas vibes being quite the same there.
I mean, I got a little bit of a chip on my shoulder about Miami.
That's okay. I'm glad you said that, Leo. Let's dive in, because I have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder about you and your chip on the shoulder about Miami. What is this about, man?
So, you may or may not know. I think you know, but listeners may or may not know. I'm originally from Tampa.
Great city.
And I am of Cuban heritage. And I kind of hate that Miami is put up as, like, the summit of Cuban culture in America. It's not. Okay? It's just not. Miami likes to claim they invented the Cuban sandwich. They did not invent the Cuban sandwich. The Cuban sandwich was invented in Tampa.
Is that true?
It's absolutely true. It's 100% true. And they don't even make them right. And I'm very passionate about that for somebody who doesn't actually eat meat.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. The Cuban food's better in Tampa. The Cuban culture's better in Tampa. You know, Cuban coffee's better in Tampa. Sorry.
That's all fine. But
I'm a hometown boy.
He wants to share his social media posts and be like, oh, look, I tried this meal in Miami. And then you immediately go and poo-poo it and are like, oh, Tampa's better. That's just rude. That's just flat out rude, man. I don't know why you got to steal people's good times.
And in legitimate fairness, like, Steve was in Tampa a few weeks ago and I should have hit him up and said, hey, you need to go here, here, and here. And I didn't.
No, you waited until he did the other thing, and then you criticize him for it.
Well, but I'm not criticizing him. I'm criticizing Miami. Like, I'll criticize Miami all day long.
Fine line, and we're going to continue this thread of conversation, because I know, like I said, get the positivity out of the way first. I've got some things stuck in my craw, and this is somebody who loves to criticize stuff, but I feel like we, as a human race, what we like to do is prop up the dissent that reflects our own bias while condemning the criticism that doesn't. It's a whole thing. I think it's because I've dropped lowered my milligram intake of nicotine in the past couple of days, but everything's just driving me crazy lately, man.
I mean, that could be a factor. That could definitely be a factor. well, I mean, you know, it kind of is a prelude to, I think I know where you're coming from this.
And
I
think, you do.
I think it's kind of a prelude to what we're going to talk about the rest of the show. So I said we had a different spin on Christmas. So we were thinking about doing the whole Christmas Carol thing of looking at the Ghost of Christmas Past, the Ghost of Christmas Present, and the Ghost of Christmas Future. But we were doing this in the perspective of DC when it comes to movies and TV.
Okay.
In particular, in movies, I'm thinking more of the universe and not like so. We're not going to like talk about the Arrowverse or you know the animated universe or the you know Batman 66 or anything like that. We may make a glancing reference to it, but that's not really the meat. We're thinking about the former DCEU, the series of films that started with Man of Steel and ended with, I guess, Blue Beetle, and there were some other projects in there with all of that, versus where we are going in the future with the new DCU under James Gunn and Peter Safran, which we got a good look at what the future of that may look like this week. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. There's a current series on, so that'll be where we talk about the Christmas Present. And we're gonna look back at the past and look back at what the DCEU brought us and you know what it did right, what it did wrong. The context I think that Jeremy is getting at here is I made a post earlier this week because I'm a little upset that the Zack Snyder fandom doesn't know when to give it a rest. It's not that I look down on them for liking what they like. Absolutely love what you love. And I liked a lot of that stuff. You know, I have been critical about some of it. But out of the 16 movies that came out from the DCEU, the only one I can really truly say, man, that was just garbage, is the second Aquaman movie. Like, there's almost no redeeming characteristics to that second Aquaman movie. It's really bad. But other than that, like, all of them I at least liked, and I'd say there's seven that I liked unreservedly. We'll talk about that when we get a little bit more time. But I had made a post on social media saying, you know, hey, love what you love, but that doesn't mean you have to burn everything else down. And I'm looking at you, Snyder Bros. And, you know, it was inspired by the fact that there was literally a movement out to review bomb the Superman trailer before it was even released. Like just at this time on Thursday, we're all going to bomb every, you know, post of the Superman trailer with hashtag restore the Snyderverse. It's like, dude, stop trying to make fetch happen. You got lucky. You made fetch happen once.
They did.
And it was the biggest mistake that Warner Brothers ever made, because now they've got a bunch of entitled whiny man babies on their hands that think that all they have to do is cry and scream and moan a lot and they're going to get their way.
It's something that I've seen with the final season of Game of Thrones as well, where they're like, we didn't like it. You got to scratch everything and then redo the finale so that it's good.
And we've seen it with Star Wars fandom too. There were actual petitions to remove The Last Jedi from canon.
Yeah.
It's kind of this, there's a certain set, and I love fandom. I'm a part of fandom. I am proud to be a part of fandom. But there is a certain segment of fandom as a whole that basically thinks it's my way or the highway.
I find this stuff so interesting. I know we don't have time to dive into it all right now, but maybe this is a conversation that we can carry forward throughout the remaining segments, because fans have an entitlement and all feel ownership over these characters, and right or wrong, I think we all participate in that. And the thing about being a critic and critiquing things it's not always completely separate from being a fan of things. So we like all exist on this spectrum, right? And I think that's an interesting thing to explore.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
There was was Christmas Eve, babe. In the drunk tank, an old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18-1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas, I love you, baby. I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
You promised me Broadway was waiting for me. You were handsome.
You were pretty queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the drunks they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing, go away, babe. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to take kind of a Christmas Carol approach to the rest of the show, but apply that to DC Comics-oriented media over the past, DC media of the last 15 years, let's say. That was like this family of films and one TV series, the Peacemaker TV series, that took place within this extended universe. And there's been other things in that time period that we've got to exclude too. The Matt Reeves Batman was not part of that. The Joaquin Phoenix Joker was not part of that.
Well, let's set it up as it was kind of conceived, which I would say is the executives at Warner Brothers at the time noted the unprecedented success that was going on over at Marvel Studios and figured if we are going to thrive in this current landscape, the best way to do that is with interconnectivity. It will drive audiences and, you know, dedicated fans back to each and every one of our movies if they know that they will be rewarded and that it will all be building to one kind of cohesive storyline. And that was the idea of it, and it was something that they struggled with from the very beginning, thus why you are naming off so many properties that weren't directly connected to that universe. But it was kind of born with Zack Snyder. Snyder was kind of the DC equivalent to what Joss Whedon was doing at the time over at Marvel. So they said, this is our guy. He's going to create this world from his vision, and he's kind of going to be the touchstone that ties all these things together. So,
well, and more accurately, Kevin Feige.
Well, who did I say?
Joss Whedon.
Oh, yeah. My bad. Excuse me. Yeah, absolutely. Kevin Feige.
Whedon was directing a lot of that early on. That's not unfair to say. And yeah, I think the thing that gets lost in all of this too is there is somebody else that we can kind of point the finger at here. And I think a lot of people are going to be surprised to hear me say this, because I think he's a brilliant filmmaker. He's one of my favorite filmmakers. He was an executive producer on everything, and he was the guy that said, Zack Snyder's our man. Christopher Nolan.
Is that right?
Yes. Christopher Nolan, after his Dark Knight trilogy, they went to him and said, we want you to do this. He's like, well, I'm not your guy, but I will work with you on it. And Chris Nolan had a hand in all of this.
Which makes sense when you think about like the how subdued and, for lack of a better expression, gritty and tonally subdued it was. You know, Marvel was doing the very bold and vibrant color palettes, and everything was a little more pop, I think, in aesthetic. And Snyder approached things with a very self-serious and almost somber tone, which many would say would be to the detriment of the characters, especially one like Superman.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's made no bones about over the years that he was looking at these characters as like gods amongst humans. And I don't necessarily think that's the right way to go. Like, I do think that there are some godlike abilities there for sure. But at the end of the day, these are still people.
Yeah, and I find that to be one of, and this is, as an outsider looking in, find that to be one of the most challenging and oftentimes inaccessible things about a character like Superman, is you have to grapple with the fact that he is not only overpowered in every sense of the word, he's got every super ability, but not only that, but he is usually portrayed as just a good guy. And in this kind of post 9/11 world that we were living in at the time, I think audiences, many audiences wanted characters that were a little more morally dubious or a little more gray in terms of not all good, not all bad. So I think, and this is with hindsight, that I appreciate what Snyder thought that he was tasked with and trying to make Superman this kind of a symbol of loneliness and isolation in a world where he didn't quite fit in. And so the way into his humanity through Snyder's kind of approach to it was the fact that he was an alien, and the fact that he was completely unique in this world, with the exception of the other Kryptonians that end up coming to Earth. And so, like, I like that he tried to approach it that way, but, and you and I have talked about this, you think that was the kind of wrong way to deal with Superman.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think the loneliness and isolation is definitely an angle. I think the stranger in a strange world thing is kind of an angle, but in the end, that's not the issues that I had with the movie. The issues I had, and I think this is kind of, you know, the foundation upon which Snyder's whole concept of the DCEU rested, and it's why I think it crumbled, is that it's kind of a nature versus nurture thing. Okay. And I think he put too much on the nature and not enough on the nurture. The nurture is the growing up in the good old American Midwest with these salt of the earth parents who taught him right from wrong and taught him that you always help your neighbor, and to see the good in everybody. And that's Superman. More than the flight and the blue suit and the X-ray vision and the super strength, that's Superman. Superman is a guy that even when he loses his powers, does everything he can. And it's happened in the comics. Superman would not have let his father die, and his father would not have wanted him to let him die. But getting away from the Snyder of it all, like, we have a series of 16 films here, and when I say 16, know that I'm counting both versions of Justice League as their own movie. So, you know, we had the version that came out in the theaters, and then there was the Snyder cut that came out a few years later that is a much longer film and in many ways a much different film. And I would say, in fairness, a much better film.
Much better film.
At least, you know, cohesively and tonally, then, you know, it's more consistent. I think that, in fairness, there's about 7 films in there that I like pretty much unreservedly. I mean, I think that, first of all, and the reason that I feel like we're in good hands going forward from here, now that James Gunn is running things, the best movie that came out of those 16 movies is The Suicide Squad. It's James Gunn's film, which was fantastic. And I mentioned that there was one TV series, which was a spinoff of that. It was the Peacemaker series, which is going to continue.
And good thing, because we both love that.
Yeah. I mean, like, if I was going to throw that in here, I didn't because it's not a film. But if I was going to throw that in here, it would be probably my number 2 or maybe even my number 1.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And I, you know, this is where I might be a little bit hypocritical. I always talk about the spirit of the character getting right. I do think he made significant changes to Vigilante in the Peacemaker series that are not necessarily the character that we saw in the comics. But there have also been several versions of that character in the comics, so a little bit of leeway there. But, I think that Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman is a wonderful movie that I like pretty much unreservedly. It has a little bit of weakness in the third act, but overall, fantastic film. The first Shazam, I think, is a whole lot of fun. The Blue Beetle movie, which ended up being the last movie, I think, that came out, if I remember correctly, or next to last, is also a lot of fun. I've actually watched that more than once and really liked it. I think The Flash got unfairly knocked. I think that is a really solid movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had a lot of fun with Jason Momoa's first Aquaman movie. I think it's a throwback to movies like Flash Gordon. That's just really, really fun. And then Birds of Prey, which I think people have just all but forgotten about. That's a really solid movie with some great characters in it.
Yeah. So as you go over all of these movies, there are certainly some that stand out as being pretty good. I think kind of stepping back and noting that there were very talented filmmakers and fantastic casting and everything involved in it, but that vision that Zack Snyder had was very early on, it was apparent very early on that it wasn't going to satisfy the broader needs of the audiences. And what happened is notes here, notes there, while also trying to be true to this vision. And it got to a place where it was like very tonally all over the place. And while Marvel has adapted along the way, and it's just certainly had its missteps along the way as well, especially more recently, but it never felt like the DCEU had firm footing on what it was tonally and what it needed to be. And that's why I feel like the universe just, they needed to get away from it as soon as they could and make things tangentially related. But yeah, there was some good casting that came out of it. And I wouldn't say that it was overall like a terrible slate of movies, but even the ones that you mentioned as ones that you really like and unabashedly think are good, I think there's probably three of them that I would co-sign as like, oh, I really like that. And it would be like The Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman and probably another one. I'd have to think about it. But for the most part, they didn't resonate with me in the same way that the MCU did.
All right. Well, we've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Once a year, my friend puts on a red suit and hangs around with me and my wife. Now I can't help but feeling jealous each time she climbs on his knee. And she stands beneath the mistletoe screaming for him to stand beneath the mistletoe screaming. Now I can't help but feeling jealous each time she climbs on his knee. Why must she climb on?
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, and we're continuing our journey through DC and film over the past 15 years or so. We visited the Ghost of Christmas Past in the last segment, talking about the films of the now behind us DCEU. And wanted to talk a little bit about the Christmas present, as we are now, which I think is probably most summed up by the series Creature Commandos that is currently airing on Max. And I think, is it also, do you know, Jeremy, is it also being shown on HBO proper, or is it just on Max?
No idea.
No idea. Where are you watching it?
On Max.
On Max? Okay. Yeah, I am as well. Obviously, or I would have known if it was being shown on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
Are you caught up on this series, first of all?
I don't think so. I think I missed one last night. So I am watched the episode about G.I. Robot, which was awesome, by the way. You said I was going to like that one. It's very, very good, but I missed the one last night.
Yeah, the one. So each episode, we've talked a little bit about the show last week, but just to catch up in case you've missed it, it's kind of, again, following up on James Gunn's The Suicide Squad and Peacemaker. One of the interesting things is we're now knowing what's carrying over from the old universe and what isn't. We're seeing that Amanda Waller has been outed as running this Suicide Squad in the past with convicted superpowered felons that she's using to run missions. She's not allowed to do that anymore. She's told she couldn't use humans anymore. So she's going to non-human. She's going to monsters, basically. And that these are the Creature Commandos. Each episode of this show has, driving forward the regular plot, looked at one member of the group and what, flashing back to what got them to where they are. And the one that Jeremy is mentioning from last week, that was G.I. Robot. Man, what a... Did you ever think you would feel for a character like G.I. Robot? Like you feel after watching that?
Knowing James Gunn, I had to know that we were going to get something similar, but they knocked it out of the park. The way that they explore the backstory, and then the way that it brings us up to his relationship with that fish girl in the current timeline. Nina. It's very, very good. What's her name?
Nina.
Yeah, I loved it though. I think it's very, very good.
Yeah, and then you haven't seen the next one yet, but the next one focuses on Weasel, which is the other character played by Sean Gunn, character we did see in live action in the Suicide Squad movie.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think it hits quite as hard as the G.I. Robot episode hits, but I think that you're gonna feel some similar beats there. And that you're going to realize that this character is misunderstood.
Misunderstood, absolutely, because that's what James Gunn does. Arguably, what he does best.
I really am loving this show, not just because, I mean, on its own merits, it's great, but it's also bringing a lot of stuff in that may or may not be planting seeds for things that we're going to see down the line. But it's just showing you what a big universe this is, in a way that, like, I think Marvel built to eventually, but I don't think it did out the gate. Like we are seeing that this is a lived-in universe. We're not seeing here's the first superhero. Now, this is a universe where, superheroes have been around for a while.
Yeah.
And we're dropping into the middle of that. And so you see, all these characters, and not just superheroes, but the characters that are parts of the DC universe. We got to see Sergeant Rock. We got to see Will Magnus, the creator of the Metal Men. This episode, we see a very obscure DC hero named Congo Rilla, who, as the name implies, is a big gorilla. We're getting to see all these neat little aspects of the DC universe, and that's super fun. We talked about how James Gunn kind of gets to the heart of things, and you kind of. It's almost predictable, but in a good way, that, you're going to come to care for these characters that you wouldn't have thought you would care about, that there's going to be these misfits and they're going to find their way and that sort of thing. But I think it also goes to the greater philosophy of what he's doing, based on what little we've seen so far, but also on things that he's been talking about. Like he's been talking about, they are not going to be slaves to release dates, which we see so many studios doing right now, where they just throw something out because they announced a date, versus they're not moving forward starting on something until the script is good.
Yeah, I love the way that sounds. I don't know that I believe it, just knowing the way that corporate structuring actually works and that they are, still on David Zaslav's payroll ultimately. But
I hear you, but what release date do you know of other than July 11th for Superman?
Oh, yeah, but yeah, for sure. That is fair. I would say not being transparent isn't the same as not having deadlines, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think they're just sitting back and saying, we'll get a movie out when we get to it. You know, I do think that they're consistently working, and we have heard a lot about projects that are in progress, and we'll talk about that a little more in the next segment. But I think that there is a philosophy going on right now that it's got to be good. And if it's not going to be good, we're not doing it. And I think that's what's important here, because I do think that in the past it was, and I'm not just throwing this at the DCEU. I'm throwing this at everybody. Like Sony, I'm definitely looking at you. Oh, we could throw anything out there with a superhero in it and it's going to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And that might have been true at one point, but it's not true anymore. And I think
And was it ever true? Because looking at the track records, I mean, even Man of Steel underperformed. So I think that was a misconception that studios had.
Yeah. You know, anything is possible. But I do think there was, and like I said, I think Sony in particular was bad about this. But I think mm-hmm. that it's fair to say that DC had its fair share of these too. It's like, well, it's we're going to announce this whole slate. We're going to put the cart before the horse, and we did Superman, so now we're doing Justice League. Instead of building to it, they like, nope, right now, here, everything.
It kind of feels like a shot at Marvel, where they would do the whole big release schedule at Comic-Con, and then all of a sudden, every time one drops off or gets pushed back, that becomes news in itself. So like the smart play is what James Gunn is doing, and I do feel like the idea of putting the quality ahead of the conveyor belt is always a better move.
Well, the one thing that I saw this week that really puts this into perspective for me and what we're talking about here is they have announced what the next film will be. The next film will be Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. And there was a statement out this week where James Gunn said, I didn't know this was going to be our next movie. Like they announced like a slate of what they were working on a while back. And this was one of them. And there was also, The Authority and the Waller TV series and the Lanterns TV series and the Paradise Lost series set on Wonder Woman's home island of Themyscira, and a few other projects, Swamp Thing movie that they announced that they were working on without any kind of definite, this is when this is going to come out, just a, here's a slate. And the Supergirl movie was on there, but I don't think anybody really necessarily, and Gunn himself said, I didn't think this was going to be our second movie, but the screenplay was ready. They came in with a great take. It looks fantastic. And so, we're moving forward on this, and we're not moving on other stuff until it's ready to move forward. And I think that's the right, that should just be how you do movies. Like I recognize the financial implications and that these are these big multi-billion dollar studios and that they've got a bottom line to worry about, but don't announce a release date for something and then be stuck with that release date and not be willing to move it when the movie's not there.
I wonder if this speaks to the, and we're kind of dipping into the future a little bit, but that's okay because a lot of what we have is kind of speculating forward. But I wonder if that speaks to the level of interconnectivity that these films are actually going to have. Because like you said, this isn't a world where one superhero has to meet the next superhero to eventually form the team. This is a world where superheroes already exist and many are established. So maybe it doesn't necessarily matter that this particular film comes out before or after whatever the next one on the slate is,
I think that's the way to go. You can still have an interconnected universe, but I think another thing, and I think we're kind of putting the cart ahead of the horse here, because I think in the next segment we're going to talk a lot about the future, and maybe that's the best place to address some of this. But I do think that Creature Commandos so far is showing me that it looks like we're going to be on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it a lot.
I think this is, it's a really solid series. I wish they were doing a little more to promote it. Like if I was going to say the one thing that they're doing wrong right now is that I don't really feel the push from Warner Brothers on it that I think it deserves. But, you know, hopefully we'll get that. I do think the audience is there and looking forward to seeing what's next. We're going to take a break. We're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analysian on YouTube. It would not be the holidays if I did not play that song. It's the best Christmas song of all time. Christmas Wrapping by the Waitresses. And, you know, I also play that because I know for a fact that since we're getting into the Ghost of Christmas future, or the Ghost of Christmas yet to come, or whatever you look at it, that the guy that is in charge of the future of the DC universe, James Gunn, also loves that song. I know that because, of course, he used it in his Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, which was fantastic.
We watched it just about 2 days ago.
Did you? I need to rewatch it.
Love it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But it just feels like it was the appropriate song to choose for looking forward. And, James Gunn himself gave us a little bit of an early Christmas present this week.
He did.
We got the first trailer for the first movie of the new DCU, and that being Superman, which is going to be coming out in July. July 11th, if I'm remembering the date correctly. I should remember it because I watched this trailer like about 10 times yesterday. So I had it in front of me enough times that I should have it memorized by now. Dude, easily my most anticipated movie of 2025. Easily. And it was up there already, but this trailer, oh man. And it's just a teaser. I don't think it's even 2 minutes long. There's not a whole lot of dialogue in it. There's nothing really about the plot of the movie, which is awesome. I don't want to know too much. But just the tone that this sets, and the things that we get to see, the images we get to see in this thing. It just hit me right in the feels, man. Just right in the feels. And I'll tell you where it hit me the hardest. I don't feel bad about like spoilers for a trailer, but if for some reason you haven't watched this trailer yet, congratulations on being off the internet for the last 48 hours or so. Dude, when he does that whistle and Crypto comes running up, that hit me, man. We got live action Crypto the Super Dog in this movie. Like, if you don't like that, we can't be friends.
I love it. As we were talking earlier about Man of Steel and how difficult it can be to humanize a character like Superman, giving him a pet is a really great way of doing that. And I think what the trailer does really well is make me, somebody who's not super, I have no connection to Crypto, the super dog, whatsoever. I'm familiar with him culturally, have never seen anything that the dog has been in, comics, any of that. But what the trailer does is it makes me feel empathy for this character that I have traditionally thought of as being a little bit inaccessible. And the fact that we see the fact that he's bleeding, the Man of Steel is bleeding in the very opening shot of the trailer, it does a good job of evoking emotion. It sets a tone that is awesome. Like, seeing Superman save that kid from the debris by just kind of shielding him with his body was awesome. There's so many little snippets in this that really worked. It's a little thing, again, coming from an outsider, but seeing Nicholas Holt as Lex Luthor with the bald head and like the kind of tears welling up in his eyes of like rage and jealousy.
Oh yeah, Holt looks great in this, man. He looks,
so from outside perspective looking in, I think it does a whole lot right. I love the fact that fans like yourself are really digging it. I have two concerns that I will go ahead and put out there into the world, and then I'll like, kind of let you take us home on this.
Yeah, you bring them up, and I'll knock them down.
All right, here we go. So there is a double-edged sword to a world where the superheroing action already is taking place, and the reason why I say that is, if this is indeed a Superman movie, I would like for his arc and his story to be the main thrust of it. And while I don't doubt that it will be, I think that there is a emphasis on a whole lot of world building outside of Superman's fantastical origin story that is being worked into the narrative.
Well,
that's
number one.
What do you think?
I don't think that this is intended to be an origin story. I don't think that we're going to see, you know, rocketing from the doomed planet Krypton or anything like that. I think this is going to be we're going to be in a world where Superman has been around for a few years. So I don't think we're going to see an origin story here. I think we're going to assume that everybody knows, just like I never need to see the Waynes murdered again. Everybody knows Batman's origin. Just like I never need to see Uncle Ben get shot again. Everybody knows Spider-Man's origin. Everybody knows Superman's origin.
I think there is a tendency as a, you know, 40, 50 year old, both of us are in this same boat, to take for granted the fact that there will be children who are being exposed to this character for the first time. So I do think that introducing us to what makes him who he is very important.
Well, I mean, I think you have to introduce you to who the character is, but that doesn't mean you have to show the, you know, Krypton exploding.
Sure.
Like I'll be frank with you. You know, when I was introduced to Superman, he'd been around for 30 plus years, 35 years. Mm-hmm. My first Superman story wasn't finding out that he was, you know, shot off as a baby and, you know, all of that, you know.
Yeah, I think I might have misstepped a little bit, but it origin is not even the most important key of that word. Is just that the story is about Superman. So seeing so many things at play could potentially take away from what is so core to this character, which to my knowledge would be the fact that he is an outsider trying to navigate what it means to be human and grapple with, you know, that kind of like responsibility that he has to be able to save the world. So
well,
that's
I mean,
one.
Is your concern because we are seeing some other superheroes in this trailer?
That's yeah. So that leads us directly into point number two, and that is, yes, there is a whole lot of other secondary things going on, and James Gunn does an ensemble very, very well. I don't think any of us question that. We've seen what he's done with Creature Commandos, Peacemaker, Suicide Squad, which are all very similar structurally. Guardians of the Galaxy, very similar structurally. But what I haven't seen is him take one character and tell a story that is completely dedicated to them. There's a lot of tonal stuff going on here, and I know that James Gunn can manage that. But what I'm worried about is just simply Superman getting a second shrift in favor of something that is more of an ensemble and more building outward instead of building inward, which is what I think any like good story, you know, really comes down to is being able to examine the protagonist, you know?
I get what you're saying, but I think that if you can look at Guardians of the Galaxy and tell me that that was not Star-Lord's movie, if you can look at Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and tell me that that was not Rocket's movie.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a way to balance it, and I think they will. Yep. I don't think that this movie is going to focus on Guy Gardner or Hawk Girl or Mr. Terrific or Metamorpho. I think they're going to be in there, and that's great. Like I said, it's a big universe, and they want to show that this is a big universe and there's a lot of things happening in it. And I can point you again to Creature Commandos, where we're seeing, you know, things like Sergeant Rock and Dr. Will Magnus and Kongorilla show up and be part of the world, but they're not taking the focus away from the Commandos.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that James Gunn has a proven track record of doing things right. I don't really foresee it being a movie that I don't enjoy. I'm curious that is it going to be something for the fans, or is it going to be something for new audiences? And I think that's the thing that time will tell, and kind of the exciting and also kind of anxiety inducing thing of this movie, that the entire fate of the DCEU, the James Gunn DC universe, kind of hinges on is how is this movie received, and is it something that's going to keep people coming back in a landscape that is very crowded with superhero stuff?
I think it can be both.
Okay.
Yeah, I think when you do these things right, they can be both. And I would point at things like Batman the Animated Series and all the series that followed that to show exactly that same kind of thing. Again, a Batman that already existed in that world and had been around for a little while. And then you lead to introducing Superman and the Justice League and all of that, and it all builds. I think that's the template. I've always said that I thought that was the template. There was a long time that I would have wanted Bruce Timm and Paul Dini to be in charge of a live-action DC universe. And I think that Gunn is that guy. So I
hope so.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful for the future. We're looking forward to seeing it. And, of course, we'll talk about it when it does come to us. I hope you guys have a great Christmas or whatever holiday you celebrate this time of year, even if you don't celebrate a holiday. Just hope you have a great end of the year. We will see you back next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.